Hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Report on the return of prehistoric human remains in Malaysia, a genetic study suggesting that Polynesians are descended from East Asians, and news on recent findings at the excavations in Chatalhoyuk. A Bronze Age site is found in Cambridgeshire in the UK, while in China a 2,500-year-old sword is excavated from a tomb. Ancient Peruvians cultivated crops 10,000 years ago is a startling new claim, and a massive prehistoric collection is discovered after a relic hunter's death in Prague. In Yemen, a newly discovered ancient coffin is destroyed and another stolen, and a giant concentric stone circle is unearthed in Italy. In southern India, the Patanam canoe is dated to the 1st millennium BCE. And that rounds up the news. So, here we go. The Malaysian Culture, Arts and Heritage Minister, Dr. Rais Yatim, will leave for England next week to secure the return of prehistoric Cha Cave, human skeletons currently kept at University of Cambridge's MacDonald Institute of Archaeology. The skeletons from the Kelantan Cave dated to around 5,000 years ago and were taken out of Malaysia in the 1950s by the former Taiping Museum director to his house in the United Kingdom. Sivaking, who died in 2007, was a prehistoric archaeologist best known for his work on flint and flint mines. A PhD student at the University of Cambridge, he carried out excavations in Malaysia in the 1950s, notably at Cha Cave. According to a statement from the Ministry's National Heritage Department, the minister would lead a delegation to formalise the repatriation of the skeletons, deemed as an important and priceless piece of evidence of the ancient populations of Malaysia. Cha Cave, situated on the bank of the Nenggiri River, is an important prehistoric site in Southeast Asia and revealed around 40 skeletons, which are important as research material and reference as they have the potential for providing information on the development of the prehistoric population in Malaysia. A new genetic study suggests the ancestors of today's Polynesians and Micronesians were probably East Asians who island-hopped swiftly through near Oceania, what is now Australia, New Guinea and the Solomon Isles. Jonathan Friedlander and colleagues found that the two modern-day groups show little genetic relation to the indigenous populations of near Oceania. The finding supports theories that Polynesians instead descended from East Asians and Aboriginal Taiwanese who apparently raced through the region. Freelander, a professor emeritus of anthropology at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, commented that they incorporated very few genes from the people in this region of near Oceania. They stayed for 300 or 400 years before moving on to explore the Central Pacific Islands, where they became Polynesians and Micronesians. The study also reveals that the Melanesian people, those from Vanuatu, the Solomon Isles, Papua New Guinea and Fiji, harbour incredible genetic diversity, evidence of tens of thousands of years of relative isolation and a series of small migrations from Asia. There's more population divergence in these islands than you will see across the whole of Europe. You'll also see the same complexity in languages. New Guinea alone has something like 900 languages in its interior. That's probably the highest density of language differential per square mile in the world. Experts have spent decades pondering how humans settled the Pacific Islands. Commonly held theories suggest that near Oceania was colonised first, between about 30 to 50,000 years ago. The newcomers arrived in small numbers, and in succeeding centuries their populations became isolated in a way that few people have anywhere else in the world. But between 3,000 and 3,500 years ago, a new migration occurred, featuring an influx of people from Asia called the Lapita, the ancestors of those who would go on one day to populate distant Polynesia and Micronesia. Some interaction between the Lapita and the Melanesian people is evident, but the critical question for scientists is the extent of this. geneticist Spencer Wells, a National Geographic Society explorer in residence and director of the Society's Genographic Project, thinks that the genetic data may show that Polynesians and Micronesians are a mix of Taiwanese Aborigines. That was a fascinating story, and I have to confess, I very much would like to be an explorer in residence too. It sounds like quite an exciting job title. I digress. Chatuhuyuk Research Director Ian Hodder says goddess icons do not, contrary to assumptions, point to a matriarchal society in Chatuhuyuk in Turkey. Findings in Chatuhuyuk show that men and women had equal social status. According to Hodder, meticulous archaeological excavation in southeastern Anatolia can change all scientific archaeological assumptions. He thinks that archaeology is like forensics, as it makes use of various methods from natural and positive sciences to answer questions like, why are residential areas so large? Why did people choose to live collectively? Why did they use the roofs and ladders to enter the houses? And, of course, why did they have burial sites under the floors of their houses? Hodder said Chatuhuyuk had come to be identified with the icon of a goddess. In the past, public attention was drawn to the female icons found during excavations. Therefore, Chatuhuyuk became identified with a goddess. Female icons, male icons, and phallus symbols were also found, however, during these excavations. And when we look at what they ate and drank and their social status, we see that men and women had that same social status. There was a balance of power. A total of 18 layers have been excavated in Chatuhuyuk so far. Research shows that cattle were not domesticated on the lowest layers. Domestication exists on the upper layers, but at that point symbolism lessens. Buildings seem to be constructed more suited for production. Hodder says that among the 18 layers, the 5th, 6th and 7th layers are the most important ones, as early art and burial sites are observed most frequently in these layers. Southeastern Turkey has great archaeological importance, and if comprehensive excavations are conducted, we may come across findings that will rock the scientific world. Excavations in the 11,500-year-old Neolithic residential areas of Göbekli Tepe, which lies 15 kilometres northeast of San Urfa, radically changed our knowledge. Before the Göbekli Tepe excavations, it was widely believed that the area stretching from the eastern Mediterranean Lebanon to Jordan experienced an agricultural revolution. Yet the excavations tore this argument to shreds, showing the agricultural revolution began much earlier in southeastern Anatolia. And recent findings show that the transition to an agricultural society began in more than just one place. Ian Hodder also plans to open a Chatuhuyuk Museum with support from Konya Metropolitan Municipality. That'll be one well worth going to. Though I have to say that if you are in Turkey, it would be well worth going to Chatuhuyuk itself. Archaeologists in Cambridge in England have unearthed the first hard evidence that the area within the city was occupied during the Bronze Age. The remains were found during a dig at Fitzwilliam College and probably belonged to a 3,500-year-old farmstead and comprised a series of ditches in which the team found antler, flint tools, pottery and animal remains. The items were discovered by the Cambridge Archaeological Unit during an archaeological survey ahead of the building of a new library in the college grounds. Plenty of Bronze Age remains have been found elsewhere in Cambridgeshire, notably in the Edenbrooks and Peterborough area, and the lower reaches of the Great Ouse River. But this is the first time that anything from this period has been found in the city of Cambridge itself. Prehistorians already know there was an Iron Age settlement nearby at Castle Hill during the 1st century BCE, and the same site was later used by the Romans, who established the town in the mid-1st century CE. Chinese archaeologists have discovered an elaborately made sword, which they believe is 2,500 to 2,600 years old, in an ancient tomb in the eastern province of Jiangxi. It's reckoned that it was the oldest ever excavated in the country, and the well-preserved sword, 50 centimetres in length, is black, gold and bright red. A dragon pattern was carved on both ends of the scabbard, and the team have dubbed it the first sword under heaven, in keeping with two other heritage pieces called the first mat under heaven and the first fan under heaven, both of which were unearthed from the same tomb. Since the start of excavations, work last January, At least 1,000 relics have been found in the ancient tomb, which was built in the late spring and autumn period of 770 to 476 BCE. I think more of us should actually take to naming finds like that. I'd like to have found the first bit of pottery under heaven. Archaeologists have long thought that people in the old world were planting, watering, weeding and harvesting for a good 5,000 years before anyone in the new world did such a thing. But fresh evidence in the form of Peruvian squash seeds indicates that farming in the new and old worlds was nearly concurrent. In a paper in the journal Science published last June, Tom DeLahaye, an anthropological archaeologist at Vanderbilt University, revealed that the squash seeds he found in the ruins of what may have been an ancient storage bin on the lower western slopes of the Andes in northern Peru are almost 10,000 years old. The temporal gap between the old and new world, in terms of a first move towards civilization, is now beginning to close. The seeds aren't the only thing that support the argument. DeLahaye also found evidence of cotton and peanut farming, and what seems to be hoes, and nearby the remains of some irrigation canals. The squash also is not native to the area, and tools made from exotic cherts and jaspers from the highlands can also be found in the same ruins. The general pattern, DeLahaye says, is that there is a technological, socio-economic, cultural package that indicates a unique and interesting event. Well said that, ma'am. Who said that archaeologists are ever cautious? An unusual collection of over 3,000 archaeological items was discovered 2 years ago in a Prague apartment whose owner died in a fire. Archaeologists who have examined the collection say it contains unique artifacts, sadly with very little scientific value because the vital information about their origin is missing. The man's one-bedroom apartment was full of strange-looking metal objects, obviously from prehistoric times. As the amateur archaeologist had no relatives, experts from the Czech Academy of Sciences Archaeological Institute were asked to go through more than 3,000 items, said to be worth millions on the black market. Among the recovered items, there is, for example, a spectacle-shaped pendant. It's one of the oldest copper objects to be found in Central Europe from around 4,000 years BCE. Only 10 such pendants have ever been uncovered in Bohemia, Moravia and Western Slovakia. But since we do not know where this one comes from, its information value is practically non-existent. The archaeologists searched the apartment for any records that would show where the artifacts came from, but found nothing about the origin of all the bowls, cups, clips, bracelets, pins, rings, and axes and many other artifacts. Experts warn that the case of this dead collector, with a huge heap of anonymous items, is just the tip of the iceberg. An estimated 10,000 metal detectorists are currently working in the pursuit of their hobby in the Czech Republic. Some treasure hunters cooperate with museums and only explore locations that have been designated by experts. Even when you catch a less scrupulous detectorist at a site with a detector and even a gold coin in their pocket, you cannot prove that he dug it from that point. Perhaps access to archaeological sites for people with metal detectors should be banned, they said. Perhaps even metal detectors should be registered. The fate of the collection of more than 3,000 items will be decided later by lawyers. Experts from the Prague Archaeological Institute suggest that after all the finds have been documented, they should become part of a comparative study collection at an archaeology department in a Czech university. I'd just like to add that there is already a system, and putting one in place like the Portable Antiquities Scheme, or even systems like the UK DFD, that's the United Kingdom Detector Field Database, Finds Database, sorry, is a real potential for them. If you want to see more on that, go to www.finds.org.uk or see one that the detectorists themselves have created at www.ukdfd.co.uk. What we've been discovering recently in Britain is that when we work together, good things come out of it. It's all down to a matter of trust and education, and that's going to have to come from both the detectorists and the archaeologists. The excavation operations at Al-Asibiya area of Ibb province in Yemen have revealed a stone grave and bronze coffin in a marble-walled room dating back to the Himyarite period of 850 to 525 CE. The characteristics of the coffin indicate to a royal one belonging to a king from the Sheba kingdom. However, locals expressed that they had found the grave and it was their right to keep the site for themselves, noting that the contents inside the grave would be better taken by them. Government security forces arrived on the scene when they heard about the discovery and placed a heavy guard around the site to keep it safe and undisturbed. Locals claim that they do not trust the government and are not sure that the antiques will be in a safe place. This is why they want to keep it to themselves. So said Abud al-Rahman Jar al-A, museum's deputy in the Antiquities General Assembly. He explained that it is routine in Yemen for people to come and try to get a share of the wealth whenever they hear about anything related to antiques. He added it's very important to understand that these historic places and artifacts belong to the government, not to the locals, who he said must not be careless about their own history. According to Jar Allah, a special Yemeni archaeological team of experts started working on the site, including two experts in ancient graves and excavation. And in addition, a German team was on its way to the site to assist. Unfortunately, in the early morning of January the 16th, unknown persons smashed the ancient bronze coffin and stole another one completely. A security official had already ordered the military patrols, which had been guarding the area for 5 days, to leave the location, but he gave no reason for such an action that gave the looters a chance to carry out their crime. That's a dot, 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 I think, on the end there. I myself have had some experience of that in Yemen where, when some locals had found I was an archaeologist, attempted to lure me down a large hole, saying that there was a coffin of gold the size of a car down there. Thankfully for me and them, I didn't. Last July, excavations for the new Santa Anna Hospital in San Fermo della Battaglia near Como in Italy revealed a double concentric circle of ancient stones. Thought to date back to 3000 BCE, the site is a highly articulated prehistoric structure that could either be an ancient astronomical observatory or a sacred space. The diameter of the two circles is about 70 metres, and they are crossed by a small pathway paved with stone. A semicircle made of several layers of small stones and soil, with a large stone about 70 centimetres wide at its centre, has also been found. Inside the circles, there seems to be traces of ritual ploughing. There's no other site quite like this in northern Italy, as it is a megalithic structure without the large standing stones. There are plans to protect the whole area and to make it into an archaeological park, freely accessible from the nearby hospital when it's completed. That's actually a good news story. It's nice to do these for a change. The radiocarbon analysis at the Institute of Physics has put the antiquity of the Pattanam canoe in Kerala, India, to the first millennium BCE. What is more, the studies suggest that the canoe found in a waterlogged trench at Pattanam could be the earliest one known in India. The artifacts have revealed that the site had links with the Mediterranean, Red Sea, Arabian Sea and South China Sea since the early historic period of South India. Pattanam is the first habitation site of the Iron Age ever unearthed in Kerala. Since previous inquiries were confined to megalithic burials, no firm dates were available for the Iron Age. The radiocarbon dates from Pattanam is therefore expected to help the understanding of the Iron Age chronology of Kerala. The Archaeological Survey of India has granted licence to Project Director P.J. Cherian for a second season, and the work is scheduled to begin in February 2008. So we wish him all success with that. Can I now remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a heritage calendar, library, guidance section and so much more, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And of course, we have Past Horizons, which opens up an opportunity to volunteer across the world. We have over 400 of these volunteer opportunities from Peru to Siberia, from Africa to Asia. So get yourself along to pasthorizons.com. And remember, more can always be found at Stone Pages. news.stonepages.com. Thanks so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.